Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 9th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You know, every once in a while, our listeners will send us one of their crazy carnival games and say, we do this all the time, it's fun. And then sometimes they'll send us some gems that aren't necessarily carnival games, and I think we found one this
week. Rocked our world at the home game this week, playing this six-card hold'em that we talked about on last week's show. I believe it was John Maroney that wrote in and said they played. And we gave it a whirl, and I don't think there was a person there that didn't like it.
No, it was a lot of fun. I think that the best part about it is that you can cover all your bases, it seems like, with just any moderate hand, from suited connectors to pairs to rags that might hit a raggedy flop, and it makes everybody usually staying into the flop. I mean, it's very difficult to find a fold pre-flop unless you have something like Queen 7, deuce, 3 suits, and then like a 3 of a 4th suit. And I mean, it's very difficult to find a fold there. And we played
Particularly at limit.
We played at limit. So especially in limit when it's just one small bet and then you never know what's going to come on that flop. You know, no limit, somebody has ace-ace, queen-queen, jack-10, double suited somewhere. They're going to raise it a lot and hold no limit. You're not going to be able to see a flop, but wow, it was exciting, and I have to admit that I cheated a little bit. I played the day before with my family that game, just because we had just talked about it on the show the day before that, so it was fresh in my memory, and I wanted to give it a shot, and I loved it, playing with my parents, and we played at no limit with my parents and my family, you know, like, we played at no limit, so it was sick, but it was great. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I think no limit definitely would be, I think would take a little edge off of it. Personally, I think. Of the fun, at least. I mean, eventually, I think it'd be good to try it. But, you know, for the fact that the limit thing, what I like about it the best is it builds a pot. You know, like you said, I mean, it's impossible, virtually impossible to fold pre-flop, even if there's a raise or a couple raises. So you know you're going to have a decent pot in this game. And then by just eliminating one of those hands on the flop, you keep almost everybody into the turn. And then after that, that's going to kind of, you know, separate the pretenders from the real guys. But also the other thing I really like about it is it really, again, this is why I like all these non-hold'em games that we talk about on the show, it stretches your poker muscles a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you really got to think about setting your hand. And again, I get real quick to remind our listeners, I mean, essentially you get six cards to start with and you have to set them into 3 2-card hands and you cannot unset them throughout the hand. And then after the bet on the flop, you throw one away. And after the bet on the turn, you throw one away and leave yourself with one 2-card hand at the end. So, you know, I faced a couple tough decisions, both in setting my hand and then, of course, just like in Pineapple, trying to decide which hand to throw away.
Yeah.
And you really got to think about things, I think, and figure it out. And in fact, actually, I mean, one example I'll give you that I immediately knew I messed up, I got pocket aces, but I was suited with both of them, and just instinctively I'm like, well, I gotta have pocket aces as one of my hand, and if there's no limit that might have been the case, but in limit with everybody in, pocket aces shrink up, as we all know, and I just blindly forgot about that, and it would be much more powerful to have two ace high flush hands working for you, plus the third hand, and I immediately regretted that, and I think I ended up winning the hand anyhow. I got lucky, I think, but yeah, it's just stuff like that just kind of strategy you just never think about.
I had a similar hand. I had two hands that were of note, and one of them was that biggest hand we had of the night, where it got capped, I think, on on like the flop, and I had sixes and fives on the flop, and I also had a backdoor flush draw on something else. And on the turn, I picked up a straight flush, open-ended straight flush draw, yeah. And two pair, and another two pair. Yeah. So I had two pair, and open straight flush draw. So when I got rid of one, I still had two. So I'm like, okay, do I keep the two pair? Or do I? And I was like, all right, no. I was fortunate that my open-ended straight flush draw cards were also two pair on the board. So it was doubly. It was like having an Omaha hand with two cards. Exactly. It was fantastic. Yeah. But that's the hand that got capped on the turn as well. I had to get out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I wouldn't have hit, so I was happy. But speaking to your point before, I had ace, ace, king, king, deuce, seven. And the ace was suited with the deuce, and the other ace was suited with the seven. So I... No. And the kings and the aces were suited. So I suited the aces together, and I kept the kings their own pair, knowing that... Or the other way around. I kept the aces their own pair and kept the kings suited because I knew that no one was going to have the ace high flush because I had the aces in my hand, but I could use the aces as a pair if I needed them. It was really weird. I mean, do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of nuances in setting that. And, I guess, this is a game for the real math guys, I think, would really clean up in it because you're able to calculate the odds of, you know, yeah, which combinations work better. But definitely, highly two thumbs up. Highly recommend it for your home games out there. And thanks for John for bringing it into our lives.
And the one thing I wanted to say too is I thought that could be a problem, or one thing that we didn't talk about on the show last week when we talked about this was when you set your hand, and exactly, when they're set, is it like the other hands are mucks? Like if you're hand one touches hand two, is that okay? Because it's touching. Now there's like this sort of, is that the muck? Because you could have swapped cards. You know, you got to be careful with how you pick up your cards and stuff. People might look at you and go, wait a minute, you got four cards in your hand. You supposed to only have two. You know what I mean? So yeah. I very, once I was very close, my cards were close. And I think everybody heard me go, whoa. I said, whoa, really loud. I'm like, these hands almost touched. And I didn't want anyone to touch, you know? So that's one thing. But also the thing about setting the hands, you can hold all six in your hand, and when it's your turn to act, that's when you should say, I call or whatever, and then put your hands down. Because otherwise, you're telling everybody you intend to play your hand if you set it early. Why are you setting it if you're just going to fold it? And if you don't set it and you just put it down, you're telling everybody you're folding early. So you got to hold the cards in your hand, then when it's your turn to act, say, I call or raise or fold, and then do what you have to do with your cards. Because otherwise, you're giving away information.
Yeah, and we also talked about it, too. I mean, there's a strategic... this is where this came up. I mean, none of us, I think, really thought about it until I think Dr. Frank brought it up and said, you know, hey, shouldn't we be setting the hands in a specific order? You know, because if I know there's a raise and a re-raise, maybe I'm going to set my hand differently because yeah, I know I'm probably up against some different kind of hands. So I think that's when I said, you know, hey, you know, if this was played in a casino, I would assume the casino would make you set your hand in order. You know, when you're under the gun, you got to set your hand and then act.
Right.
I would think. And then I started thinking about it, you know, and one of the reasons I don't think this would ever work in a real casino is you have to be paying attention to people with their hands and set. You know, you'd almost need another layout where you have, like, you know, like a table game where you could put those hands so people clearly know the hands are set. You know, if you got the dealer's got to watch 10 people with three hands each in front of them and making sure no one's swapping cards back and forth, I think that would be really difficult.
Now, I do think that before the last bet is made, before the flop, you should be allowed to change your mind. Because let's say I have ace-ace, 2-5-6-8, whatever it is, and the aces are suited, but it folds all the way to me on the button, and I think my aces will be good, and I set them as aces, and then I raise, and then the small bet raises, and the big blind re-raises. Now it's back to me. I have to stick with those aces when I could have made them. Now I think it's going to be a big pot, and I didn't think a flush is going to be needed to win. Let me set it back to a flush hand, and then call the re-raises, and then go to the flop. So I think you should be able to change your mind before we go to the flop.
Mm. Yeah, that's another way of doing it. Absolutely.
You know, otherwise, you know, okay, because I was under the gun, I can't change my approach to this game. I mean, to me, I think you should be able to do that. Just like when you're playing Pineapple and you have ace, king, ace, you know, if it goes raise, 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 and then they throw the card, after the flop, you could throw a card away. If it was a bunch of raising and betting on the flop, you didn't have to set that you're going to play the aces. Now you have a suited ace, king, you're going to go for the flush instead to try to make the bigger hand. So I think it's sort of in the same vein.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know? So I don't know. I just feel like that's what you should be able to do with your hand.
A tremendous different, lots of ways to play it. So, yeah. I mean, again, it's one of those things probably when you're interested in home game is have the discussion of how you want to do it so you don't get in the middle of a hand and have it,
exactly.
Which is going to be common in a home game.
Exactly.
It worked out for us because I think we were just messing around with it a little bit. But
big pots, though. We had a couple of really big pots.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's one of the biggest pots of the week.
Yep. If you play at no limit, you know, someone's going broke.
I think. Hey, I'm free to ride, fly around the country. Well, speaking of that, I didn't fly to Jacksonville. I did drive up to Jacksonville last week. Actually, we both had a lot of stuff going on last week, but we had too much else to talk about on the show. So, doing a little recent history here on the show.
Yeah.
And so I went up to Jacksonville for their WPT Jacksonville Fall Series. My first time actually seeing the new Best Bet Jacksonville room, which you had already seen.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely amazing. You know, it reminded me a lot of the Parks room, and I know you haven't been to Parks yet. But players that have been to Parks, I think when you walk in, the both of them, they're somewhat similar. Obviously, the Jacksonville room is that's much lighter and airier. So, but very nice. And they had a Limit Omaha 8 event going on, so I decided to put some money in there, donate to the cause. And first thing I want to say is I didn't cash, obviously, this would have been on the last week's show. But I was eliminated by the eventual champion. And I think that should be worth something, shouldn't it?
Oh, sure. Pat on the back.
Kind of like a reverse bounty or something.
Yeah, here's your virtual pat on the back.
Well, I mean, if he wasn't in the tournament, then I would have won, right?
Oh, yeah. You would have been the one that went on. So that I agree with you, though. I always like it that if I get knocked out, at least I get knocked out by somebody who put those chips to good use and won the tournament. And then you can say, hey, it took the champion to knock me out.
Yes.
Make yourself feel a little bit better about donating.
But real quick, one hand I want to talk about, and just one of those gee whiz kind of things. But I was dealt ace 6, 7, 10, and I flopped a 6 and turned another 6.
Wow.
And I was leading the betting out the whole way, right? Before the third and final player in the hand act on the turn bet, the dealer burns the card and puts down a 7 for the river.
Dope.
Obviously giving me a boat. And I immediately knew when he did that, I'm like, oh, man. Thanks. And and of course, the dealer realized it right away. And he knew exactly what he needed to be done, but he had obviously called the floor over. And the floor correctly ruled that the opponent completed the action he called. And once he did that, that 7 needed to be returned to the deck. The deck needed to be shuffled, and they needed to put a new river out. So obviously very frustrating to me because I thought that... At that point, I thought I was kind of... I thought I was good with just my trips with the ace kicker.
Right.
But certainly it's nicer to have that boat in the back pocket, right? But, you know, it was frustrating beyond belief. But the other thing that was really funny was that the dealer was like, to the floor, he's like, I need a shuffle? He's like, yes, you need a shuffle. And I'm like, he's like, there's only like 6 cards here. It was like a 10-handed Omaha table.
Right.
And it was hilarious to watch this guy try to shuffle like, just a couple cards. And he's like, can I wash them? He's like, no, you can't wash them. You have to shuffle them. And so he eventually shuffled them, and he burns, and boom, puts out a different 7 on the board.
Oh, my God.
So, of course, I'm ecstatic now. My boat came back out. All was right in the world. Actually, the suit didn't change anything. It wasn't like the other one would have made a flush or this one would have made a flush. So it was about as best of a outcome as you can expect from not getting the actual card. Ended up winning the hand, obviously, and your people were like, man, you were really calm and cool during that. I would have flipped out. I'm like, you know, it was Limit Omaha. I mean, come on. You know, stuff happens, but pretty funny to me that, I mean, I don't think there were 6 cards. There might have been 8 or 10, or whatever it was. There's very few cards. Kind of funny that 2 of them left are 7s, and it actually worked out that way. It doesn't really often work out that way, I wouldn't think.
That's pretty rare, especially because 2 7s are in the last 6 cards or whatever, and that's just remarkable. And then it comes out, too, for you. That's pretty wild. But the real question is, where were you in position in this hand?
I was small blind.
Okay, so you're in the blinds with that crap hand, right? That's why you're okay. Because was the ace suited, at least?
I believe it was, yes. Oh,
okay, so that helps.
I think the ace and the 10 were suited.
That helps your case a little bit there.
Yeah, it was early in the tournament, so, I mean... You know, this is the funny thing about this tournament. I was talking about the home game a little bit. When we sat down, we had 10,000 units, 25-50 blinds, and 30-minute levels. I sat down, and I thought I was going to have to call you and tell you, I'll be back to help you with the March issue. I thought this tournament was going to go on forever, even with just 52 people in it, right?
Right.
And about 4 hours later, I'm out, because eventually... Those blinds, they didn't escalate tragically, I didn't think, but eventually they escalate to the point that the chip stacks, it makes it a little tougher at that point, and you find yourself knowing that you're going to be pot committed, and certainly in the round that I went out, it was like, you know, someone, the exterminator was there spraying for mosquitoes. I mean, people were just falling left and right, but it really is a reminder. You really have to plan ahead and know the structures and adjust your game a little bit.
You know, limit structures are always very deceiving. I mean, when you play No Limit Hold'em, and let's say you're playing just a cash game, you're playing 1-2 No Limit, and you're like, all right, I'll check the turn, or I'll bet like $4 here or something, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, that's not that much, not that big a deal. But when you're playing Limit, and you're playing like 6-12, $12 is a pretty big bet. And then when somebody raises you 24 and it's back to you, and it's $24. If you're playing No Limit Hold'em with a $100 stack, that's a quarter of your stack.
Yeah.
And when you're playing Limit Hold'em for like 6-12 or even, you know, 4-8 or whatever, and it's 16, that's, you know, 10 to 15% of your stack. That's a lot of chips. And it adds up when it's a bet and a raise and a call or something. It adds up. And so I'm not surprised that, you know, after a couple of hours, you're looking at your stack thinking, holy cow, these are big bets we're making on the turn. They really are called big bets for a reason. And
yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's no bet sizing, obviously. I mean, and No Limit doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, limits get to the point where you need to shove if you're playing properly, but you could always bet the minimum all the way every street in No Limit. Yeah. You wanted to. In Limit, you can. You know it's going to be that second bet. And you also know that, again, I mean, we talk about this in the home game. Somebody's like, that's why I hate Limit. You can't get people off hands. Completely the wrong way to think about Limit. It's about making bets and saving bets. And so there's more action in Limit, I think, than No Limit. So, you know, I mean, there the last two rounds that I was in the tournament, I knew I am not getting involved in the hand unless I have a monster.
Yeah.
Or I'm in position or something like that where I can really play, because I know it's going to cost me my stack. There's no not costing your stack at that point.
And, you know, you make a really good point about people always saying, I can't get people off the hands of Limit. I hate it. And that's how I started my career with you guys, was I used to hate it. And once I embraced it the way you said, to get a bet out of somebody or save a bet, My Limit game totally changed. And we saw that frustration in the home game. We had some new people playing in the home game this week, and they talked about how they just hate Limit Hold'em. They hate it because you can't get anybody off a hand and their kings are useless. And you can't think of it that way. It's like making lemonade out of lemons, sort of. Not that game's a lemon, but but it's the best analogy you can say. Hey, you're already playing it. You know, play optimally. And optimally is, okay, I realize I have kings here. Sometimes just calling is the right thing to do, not raising, because now you're giving them the odds to draw out on you because they only have to have one bet on the flop and a big bet on the turn. You know what I mean? It's a different way to play the game, you know, and you have to think that way. It is an art and a science. You know, it's science in Limit Hold'em, and it's an art in No Limit Hold'em, and just accept it. And you're right. You're absolutely right that, you know, people who complain about they can't get people off hands are playing it wrong.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you were saying how busy we were last week, and I actually thought about calling you up and saying, hey, you know, I know you're going with the wife or whatever, but I might consider going to the WPT with you, but I couldn't, because I had to go to a bachelor party, which was a poker tournament for my soon-to-be son-in-law, and I found some very interesting, and it was odd to me, and the minute I said it to you, you like automatically had the right answer. And so I want to bring it up again here, and I have some other stuff about that weekend that I'll talk about on a future show. But for this one part, I played in this tournament. It was about 20 guys or so, and you know it was a rebuy tournament. You could rebuy because the idea is that half the money goes to the bachelor and the other half goes to the pool. You know, so you try to raise some money for him. Yeah. So
that never happens at strip clubs.
Half the money goes to the lady, and half the money goes. So the majority, most of these people, were all from the same kind of home game environment. A couple of them were like my father and my dad, who weren't in a home. They just my father, my brother. I mean. And my father has split personality.
There's a Holy Ghost there too.
But for the most part, it was this group of guys who know the Bachelor, and they play in their regular home game tournament every week, like every week, sometimes twice a week. And so I brought the chips because I had a bunch of chips in my house and whatever. And a lot of them know who I am, so I just downplayed that. I just, you know, didn't want anybody busting my chops about anything, so I just sat there. But eventually, everybody kept asking me what they needed to do for this blind level, or how do we, because when we consolidated the one table, they never had that happen before, because none of these guys ever played in a multi-table tournament. It's always their home game tournament and stuff, so they didn't know how to balance the tables and all that, so I kind of piped up then and stuff. So I found it very interesting. I cashed in this tournament, by the way. It was like 20 people. They paid 3 spots, and I went out with the faded ace-10. I had ace-10, and I went all in against a chip leader who had ace-4 and flopped a 4, so I got knocked out in third. But I cashed, and what I noticed was that these people, despite playing every single week all the time since the boom, are still terrible. And I just don't understand in this day and age. Now, we're not talking about Oscar Madison and his buddies all coming in smoking cigars and however the cards fall that night, time of day, year, you know, I mean, of era of poker. This is, it's on TV everywhere. It's in the books. It's in the zeitgeist. It's everywhere, man. It's ubiquitous. Why are people not getting better in this? I mean, they were horrible. These guys were horrible, and it took very little effort for me to make the final table and cash in this tournament. Very little effort, and they all wore their tails on their sleeves. And I'm not dissing them. I'm just stating facts. I just don't understand. These guys play all of the time, Scott. I mean, you know how we try to have once a month if we can, sometimes twice a month, but very rarely. These guys play all the time. I can't stress that enough. And they were horrendous. How do you not, even just by the mere repetition of playing the game and seeing the results and understanding what happens, not understand, you know, what is a better play or what is the right move, or, hey, maybe I am telling these people too much information by the way I'm acting or the way I'm betting, or it's just remarkable. I mean, I've known my daughter's fiance for probably 4 years now. So they've been playing at least 6 years, these guys, together. And it just shocks me. And you had a real good answer. I mean, I thought for sure that it was, like, just crazy. But you were like, no, it's pretty obvious.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I said is that, you know, if you are just playing with the same people over and over, I don't think you're ever going to improve. You need to be able to move out and experience the game in a different way. Now, that being said, I mean, these people obviously could, as you said, read books or something like that and maybe improve. But generally, I think it's really hard to elevate your game by playing the same people, whether it's a home game or we even mentioned when we were talking about this, you know, these free poker leagues where generally the play is not very good, and it's not just because people are beginners, it's because they never move on to anything else. So, you know, you keep the same bad habits. You don't learn anything from the same people. You have to get out and challenge yourself with some folks. And I'm probably fairly certain that there are some people in this that probably win every week, and some people would probably lose every week. I could be wrong. But and for them, that's fine. But take them out of that environment, put them in, probably an official poker environment, they'd probably get their clocks clean.
Yeah.
And it's because they're just not exposed to anything.
I did get the impression that these guys just loved to be around each other and play poker. And
yeah.
And there were a couple, you could tell there were a couple of guys who were better than the other ones, so that was fine. But it just was remarkable to me that, you know, people were going all in with Jack Deuce suited, and it was just like, okay. You know, I mean, some of the plays they made were just horrendous, and some of the folds they made were horrendous, and I just kept my mouth shut and just moved my way through the field. And if I had won that ace-10 versus ace-4 hand where I was like a 75% favorite, you know, I would have been chip leader or close to it, and then would have won the whole thing probably. And it just, and the person who, you know, took me out was my stepson Charles, who's a very good player. He's played with us in our home game before in our home tournaments, and he's real, you know, analytical with his thinking and playing, and aggressive when he has the hands and stuff. So that was the only reason why I didn't win, was because he was in my way. You know what I mean? If he wasn't there, it would have just been travesty for them. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. And I, like I said, I have some other stuff to talk about this, and we'll do it on a future show or whatever. But it was a good time. I mean, he made a lot of money. He raised a lot of money for him, and you know, we played and cashed, and I cashed, so I was happy with that. But yeah, you made a good point. You know, and maybe they don't have any interest in getting any better. They just feel like, I'm getting together with my friends, and I'm, you know, I'm paying that price to get with them, yeah, and maybe have a chance at winning. And don't think of it as a skill.
That's perfectly fine. Absolutely.
Yeah,
perfectly
they don't
fine.
Think of it as a skill. So,
you know, I just think the absolute best way to improve your game is to play against different people. You know, in regards to books you read and stuff like that. And that's the one of the things I really love about my job now, is being able to travel around the country, because poker is different everywhere you go. And I'm certainly nowhere near a pro yet, but I've certainly learned a lot about the game by playing in different regions and seeing different people and different limits and different things like that. So, you know, I mean, obviously the people listening to the show, generally speaking, are trying to get better. So that's my advice, is if you're just playing with the same people every week, that's probably the biggest detriment to your improving as a player.
Absolutely. All right, our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we'll give you something cool. Unless we've given you something cool before. But this comes from Brian from Jersey.
Anyway, as far as not making the guarantee, I went to Borgata once before a big snowstorm, and we got snowed in, and they canceled the tournament because clearly there was, like, a huge snowstorm. Should I have made a big stink about that because the 15K guarantee didn't play, and, you know, I couldn't get this massive overlay?
No, you can't yell about this, right?
No, you can't. It's you know, I mean, you gotta. I do start to think that maybe they. We've talked about this before on the show when the hurricane went through South Florida, but you know, you have to start to think that maybe these advertisements should say, barring a Darwin thing. You know, God, you know,
acts of God,
acts of Darwin. You know, I mean, if that happens, then you know, everybody has to understand that people can't get there, and it's not just about them covering their butts to not have to pay the money. They don't want people risking their lives to go there and play in this tournament. Oh, he was snowed in at the Borgata. What if people said, you know what, I think I can make it up the turnpike and get into an accident and die because they wanted to get there for the layover? I mean, that's just bull. So, no, you can't put a stink, I don't think, you can about this.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be humans about this. I'm not picking up Ryan. I mean, obviously it was a fun call from him, but, you know, there should be some form of compassion in poker. You want to have compassion at the table. Be ruthless as you want at the table, but... But understand that, you know, hey, if it's a snowstorm, a hurricane, or something like that, you know, this is what drives people crazy about our society, I think, and why lawyers make so much money, because you got to write that stuff in the contracts just because you know you can't trust that someone is not going to be rational about it.
Right.
And, you know, to your point, I think that would, certainly there's protection there by putting an asterisk saying, you know, in case a space alien comes down and crushes our casino, guess what? We're not going to cover the guarantee, but really, I mean, can't we all just agree that, you know, if it's weather-related, that's one thing. If it's just the manager saying, oh, my God, I got to save my butt from the bosses and I'm going to pull it, that's when you bring out the claws and become attacked.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's no other way to think of it. If you really think that people should risk their lives to try to make this layover, that's not fair. It's not fair to the property. It's not fair to the people. I mean, I would not want that blood on my hands if I said, oh, we're going to have to hold it, and people die getting there. And when it's funny, it just popped in my head, but when I was younger and I used to bowl all the time, you know, you bowl in Connecticut, you have that chance in the winter of there being a ton of snow that night, and the league president would always have to make the decision to cancel bowling or not. And, you know, and the bowling lanes always wanted you to bowl, but they understood that, you know, when there was 6 inches or 12 inches of snow out there on a Friday night and you're supposed to bowl, it's not happening. And the president calls, his vice president, and the vice president calls whoever they need to, and then they call the captains, and the captains call their team members, and the bowling is canceled for that night. And they call the bowling alley and tell them. Same thing with poker. I mean, just because you can win a lot more money in poker on any given night doesn't make it any more important than people who are doing bowling or any other kind of organized league. So I totally agree with them canceling the guarantee and hopefully not getting any brushback from it.
Absolutely. All right, Brian, well, we've recently given you something great, so nothing today. But everybody else, remember to call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you something cool like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up. Pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com. And you can also win a prize if you send us something for our mailbag. And this is an interesting one, and I'm very interested to hear your opinion on this, Chris. So okay. let me read the email from Scott Wagner, and then I'll pick apart your answer.
Thank you. I'm sure you will.
All right, so Scott says, I want to know if I'm the only person who has experienced this from another player. Right away, Scott, I can tell you right now, you're not. He says the flop is a queen 10 8 rainbow. He bets $15. His opponent makes it 35 and he calls. The turn is a 9. I'm sorry. So he checks the turn. The board now is queen 10 8 9. His opponent bets and he comes over the top. He's got pocket. Our guy has pocket kings. His opponent thinks for a few minutes, goes to call, then stops and folds. We, of course, slip over our kings and said, your jack had me. And he says, now this is where it gets weird. I look over in the next hand, and a guy has his hand over his forehead and eyes looking down, crying. There's no crying in poker. I couldn't believe it. Have you heard of anything like this before? He says, the reason this play worked is my game plan is when I play... is I play overly tight and show every nut hand I have made for the first hour or two. After people peg me as an extremely tight player, I open my range and start taking huge pots down. People get scared thinking a $50 bet from me or a re-raise means I have the nuts. Eventually I'm caught with air, but then I start to cycle over. What do you guys think about this plan in a cash game and anything you think I should be worried about while executing this plan?
Okay, so we'll recap here. He didn't show his kings until the guy mucked, right?
Exactly.
All right, so, and then he tells the guy he had a jack. So he believes that this guy had a jack and mucked, because he thinks that his opponent thought he had king-jack, and then when he realized he had him beat because he had whatever it was that beat king-king, you know, the jack or whatever, and that's why he was crying. No, I've never seen anyone cry at the table before, ever.
No, actually, I don't think I have either. Now.
I know I've wanted to cry at the table many, many, many times, but I have not done it. I've gone to the men's room and done it, but I haven't done it at the table. So no, I have not seen that. But to get back to his attack here and his plan of play, you know, the way of thinking and stuff, I would embrace that in a tournament. In a cash game, unless I know I'm playing with these people, and I mean everybody at the table, yeah, for a few hours, and I know that I'm playing at a level high enough that they can understand what playing tight is and that I am playing tight and they've paid enough attention to me in those 3 or 4 hours that they realize that I'm playing tight, then I might pull this sort of stuff. But when I play, I don't play limits that are high enough to get that kind of thinking player around me, and they don't stick around long enough because usually their chips are gone and they leave. And so it's almost like online poker where people are just coming in and out of the table all the time. So all that hard work I put in to be a tight player who's always showing the nut hands. Oh, by the way, when he says I show every nut hand I have for the first hour or two, yeah, I make the nuts like one time a session. I don't know how he's got every nut hand for the first hour or two. Oh, my God, I would love to make one nut hand.
I was going to say this. I mean, I kind of like his approach here, but I think the first thing that stuck out to me is to make this work, you have to get nut hands and be able to show them down, right?
Exactly.
And you can't count on that. I mean, you could have a good rush and get them, but you know, here's the thing about, I mean, we always talk about it, it's a game of people, not cards. You know, if you don't care what you have and you make bets and you don't have to show any hands down, it doesn't matter what cards you have. You can do that regardless what you have. But if your strategy is dependent on being able to show some really good hands for an hour or two, you can't control that.
No.
I mean, you can show down your hands, but they're going to be complete bluffs sometimes. So that, to me, I think is the big weakness in it. Now, obviously, I don't know how long he's been doing this, and maybe it's been working out, or maybe I'm overthinking a little bit. But I would tend to think it's tough to rely on a strategy that's dependent on cards.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could modify it to say near nut hands, or the hands where it's obvious you have the big hand that's not the nuts. But
right.
But even so, it's tough to make a hand.
Winning hands, exactly.
Yeah, it's tough to make a hand and have winning hands. And so I like that in a tournament because generally people who play tournaments did invest a lot of money, but they got a ton of chips in front of them, and you know you're going to be with them for a few hours at that table because they're not going to move you generally, for the most part, for a while. People are going to be stuck at your table for a while, and because they have so many chips, more than they would buy in a cash game, they can survive longer and sort of pick up on the nuances of your play. So I would more do that in a tournament than I would in a cash game. So when you say anything you should be worried about when executing this plan, yes, be worried about players who aren't as cerebral as you think they are, and be wary of, oh, is that the same guy in seat two that was there an hour ago when I showed down my ace-ace? Yeah. I can't remember. You know, be cognizant of the people around you and listen to the way they play and what they say at the table, because if they're giving the impression that they are cognizant of what's around them, then yeah, maybe that plan will work. But I would be worried that too many people aren't as good as you're allowing them to be, and that they're actually not the people they thought they were 2 hours ago. So those are things you got to keep track of too.
Excellent. And well, we got a new call to the floor this week, and it comes from our old friend Vic Delante. He's that chip collector.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's the chip collector from North Florida, right?
Yeah. It was in one of our very first issues, I think, or one of our very early issues.
Yeah, very early issues.
So he doesn't just collect chips; he collects chips while he's playing, and sends actually a very lengthy call to floor. So let me try to get through it without mucking it up here. But he says he was in a 1-2 no limit hold'em game in a Louisiana casino. Final board is Trey Jack 8-5 Trey. Seat 5 bets the river and seat 1 calls. Seat 5 says 2 pair and table says Jack 8 right above the Jack and the 8 on the board. After the dealer put out the river cards, he dropped the stub and fanned it into the muck. Nothing out of the ordinary. Seat 1, who had pocket queens, saw the 2 pair. Sitting next to the dealer, slid his cards face down toward her. Because the dealer fanned out the stub, which is now touching the muck, the yellow cut card is still in the bottom of the fan stub and on the far left next to seat one. When seat one mucks, one of his cards touches the cut card, and his second card only touches his first card. The cards sit there for a split second before seat one realizes seat five's 2 pair were counterfeited on the river, and his queens and trays are the winning hand. He grabbed his hand and tabled it. Seat 5 said the hand was mucked. It was obvious to some at the table that the inexperienced guy in seat 1 had a pocket pair and won the hand, but accidentally mucked. It was also obvious seat 5 positioned his jack 8 in a way to try to conceal the fact that he'd been counterfeited, and it worked since seat 1 mucked the overpair. The floor was called, and it was explained that seat 1 mucked his cards, but only one card touched the muck, but the card it touched was the yellow cut card and not the other cards. Is the cut card considered part of the muck? What's the correct call? Since the floor person ruled the hand was retrievable, and seat one was awarded the pot. He said whether the cut card is part of the muck is not the issue. He said if the cards are clearly identifiable, the player can retrieve them.
Interesting. All right, so Jody says the underlying reason for not retrieving cards from the muck is to prevent someone from pulling a hand is faster than the eye trick and coming out with a winner they didn't previously hold.
Hey, Chris Angel.
Is a solid yellow card that has no resemblance to the actual cards in play a danger to the integrity of things? I don't think so. In this instance, should the inexperienced player be allowed to turn up his 2 cards that are obviously his? Sure. Does this mean when someone lays their cards on top of the muck, then claim their cards are the 2 on top of the muck, they get to have their hand back? Never. One thing I want to say is, I'm not necessarily certain that the guy with Jack 8 was trying to conceal that he was counterfeited, because he wasn't counterfeited. He's only counterfeited if the person has an overpair. And how does he know what that person has, because he didn't show his hand? He's hoping that the person has Ace Jack, and he's showing he has Jacks and 8s, his own 2 pair, not the pair that's on the board. right?
Very different. Exactly. Yeah. Very different if it was pair of eights on the board and he had Jack Trey.
Yeah.
At that point, he's not playing those two pair. He's playing
the
top pair.
Exactly, the top pair and the other pair. So he's trying make that point that I have Jacks and eights, not Jacks and Treys. And that's what he's showing the guy, because he thinks the guy has been in the hand with him the whole time, probably has an ace jack in his hand or a king jack or something. So,
but, you know, generally when we get these kind of descriptions from players, I tend to think that there's something going on before the specific situation.
That could be the case, yeah.
Where they kind of frame these people as villains. You know what I mean? I mean, quite possibly this guy was probably a jerk on a couple other hands. So it's just easy to think that he's being a jerk on this hand, even if he's not. But that doesn't change the fact that you're right. I mean, obviously... I mean, he tabled his hand the way it should be. Two pair.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where it gets kind of sticky, I think. I mean, you got these people that, you know, hey, rules are rules. Let's be absolute about it. And the other people that say, you know, rules are there just to be sure that we really deal with the difficult ones. If it's something that can be easily fixed, then let's not worry about it. And that's a tough debate. That's a debate we're always going to have, I think.
That's why Rule 1 exists. Rule 1, do what's in the best interest of the game. And the other thing, too, is the cut card a card? Or is it the tools for which you can... Because, in other words, the felt is touching the muck. The felt is a tool of which we use to play the game on. The cut card is the card of which we use to separate the cards and then to cover the bottom card. So I don't think of it as a card. I think of it as a tool that the dealer is using, and it's touching the tool. It's just like it's touching the felt. As long as it's not actually in the muck, it's retrievable.
Yeah, and, you know, I tend to think that, you know, when people make their intentions known by turning cards face down and flipping them somewhere or pushing them or somewhere, to me, that's saying I'm mucking.
Yeah.
You know, I think where we had to get specific about this, or the TDA did eventually, was that's where the whole touching the muck came up, where it's actually completely dead then. Because it's kind of hard, then you get to play, you know, referee on, you know, did he really mean to pluck, or maybe he meant to flip his cards face up and they fell face down. Oh, that's a muck! You know, there's all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, I think anytime you get into the situation, it's always going to be a difficult resolution.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because the interpretation now is, you know how when you're playing in poker, if you tap the table, it's considered a check.
Yeah.
You can also say check. Well, okay, if you say fold, verbal is binding. So if you make the fold motion of taking your cards face down and throwing them toward the dealer, shouldn't that be binding? No matter if it touched the muck or not, you intended to fold because you folded. Now, if you had said fold and then said, oh, wait, I got a queens and threes, no, you said fold. Right, so it's a very slippery slope. I don't know. I'm just glad I'm on the other end and not having to deal with making those decisions.
This is one of those weird situations where not verbalizing your action actually works in your favor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you would say, I fold, I just got one pair, then you're screwed at that point.
Yeah,
but you've been quiet, so so frustrating.
Yeah.
All right, Vic. Well, we're happy you sent us the call to the floor. We're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to email your call to the floor questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post them in our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum. And Jody will answer them, and we'll give you something great.
In our feedback segment this week, Jeff Hayashi says that he has some points to make about the World Series on ESPN. He says, while slow, this was fantastic poker. There was almost 20 hours of poker and 400 hands of final table coverage in which you got to see every hand with expert analysis of each hand and view the whole cards after the hand. What better learning experience can you get for free? Now, I agree that with everything he just said, the problem is that the E in ESPN stands for entertainment. And this is not entertaining to 99.1% of the viewing public.
Normal ESPN viewer, absolutely.
And we always say, don't learn poker from television. Now, just because that these guys were showing you what they had and everything, you don't know the relationship he had with that player from day five and knows that he folds when I do this, or he raises me when I do that. And so you don't know why they're raising sometimes. You don't know why they're folding sometimes. Generally, we can get it because we're all educated poker players to a certain extent, and we listen to podcasts and read magazines and stuff. So yeah, we probably get it. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a learning experience, but no one's tuning into that final table to learn.
Yeah, and I think that's really kind of the problem. I mean, I give him a little more credence on this than where it's kind of cut up a little bit, because at least you can watch it straight through. Yeah. So far, far more learning experience. And definitely, it's great for him to take that approach. I mean, I never really thought of that myself off the top of my head. But again, the problem is, I mean, if there was a new poker network that was on the satellite or the cable, then a completely different story. But when it's ESPN and, you know, such a high-profile network, and we're trying to get a second poker boom here and attract people to watch the game, play the game, showing them this much boring footage to the layperson, it's not helping our cause any.
No,
so,
absolutely.
To me, it's just the application of where it is. So,
all right, the inaugural AUPT event, that stands for Anti-Up Poker Tour, will be at Thunder Valley Casino Resort in Sacramento, California, November 19th to December 3rd, and Scott will be on site November 23rd to the 26th. More details on all AUPT events can be found at antiuppokertour.com.
Yeah, and definitely show up now, because we got a little new toy to play with here. We just designed this great 6-foot sign with the front of the magazine. We cut the little head out, so you can stick your little head out like you're in Disney World and have a little fun picture. And I was going to have a little bit more fun with it here at the house before I package it up to send it off to Thunder Valley, but I didn't, because I'm getting ready to go on the cruise. But I'm going to have some fun with it at the actual events. But folks can come out to any of the Anti-Up Poker Tour events, and it will be there, and you can take some great souvenirs. So thinking about maybe we may have a contest.
Okay.
For some of the best ones. Wouldn't that be great?
I'm hoping that there are some casinos that we're affiliated with that allow pets.
Yep, exactly.
People bring their dog and put their dog's head through it and stuff. But, yeah, it's your chance to be on the cover of Anti Up, whether you win the event or not. But please come out and try to legitimately earn your cover. Don't forget, I'm going to be with Lee Childs in the Daytona Toyota Holiday Charity Classic on December 2nd at Daytona Beach Kennel Club in Daytona Beach, Florida. Lee will be teaching some seminars the day before. You can register early for a chance to win a seat in Lee's classes at holidaycharityclassic.com. So I always enjoy going over to Daytona Beach and playing with the rabbis, his events, and the people there. It's like a home away from home for me. I go there often, so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be great to have Lee involved in it this year. Speaking of Lee, he'll be on our cruise next week, but we've got four more cruises coming up next year. Jonathan Little will be our pro on the February 4th cruise out of Port Canaveral. Rates are only guaranteed through November 19th. And we're also sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa next year. And get all the details, including how you can wing your way on board at Dover Downs, Derby Lane, Tampa Bay Downs, and Daytona Beach Kennel Club at antiupcruises.com.
All right, let's see what's happening in the Anti-Up News Desk this week.
The World Poker Tour has announced its 2013 schedule, which will kick off January 27th at the Borgata in Atlantic City and end May 23rd at the Bellagio in Las Vegas.
One of the things I noticed about the schedule was there are a lot more international ones this year.
That was what jumped out at me, too, is it seems to be becoming much more of an international tour, which is great for people around the world. But not nearly as many domestic events as some of the other tours out there. So
I think they truly want to be World Poker Tour.
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that.
Mohegan Sun at Pocono Downs in Pennsylvania has announced it will launch a free play online poker site in 2013.
Yeah, very interesting here, because there doesn't seem to be any movement in Pennsylvania, at least that I've heard of, towards allowing online poker for money there. You know, like we've seen in Nevada and Delaware and some other states.
Right.
So, you know, normally I think you'd go through the effort on this as a precursor to that. So at this point, unless they know something we don't know, it sounds like it's just a way to kind of build some brand loyalty for the actual room.
Yeah, and maybe a way to collect email addresses and contacts or something too. I don't know, but
yeah
you're right. You're right.
There's certainly a lot of marketing potential from it. It's just a matter of whether the return on investment is there. So... but hey, it's not my money. It's their money. So
that's right.
Hope it works out for them.
And finally, Barack Obama was re-elected president of the United States on Tuesday. No word yet on what that might mean for online poker, but in Maryland, voters approved a ballot issue to allow table games, including poker, in the state's casinos.
That's huge.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we love to see poker expand across the country, and, you know, that's one more state that's going to have it in a legal form. And I know our ambassador up there, Michael Young, is very excited about this, and we'll be keeping our eyes on that to see how quickly that happens up there. But very good news for people up in the Mid-Atlantic region, I think.
And you said earlier today that you had read what the PPA had to say about it.
Yeah, actually, there's some very good comments from John Pappas, the executive director of the PPA. He actually made the comments before, on Election Day, before the results were announced. And essentially what he said is that the best path towards getting online poker regulation is to get it done in this lame duck session that's coming up here in the next 6 weeks, which we always kind of knew. And he said for that to have any chance at all, You can't rock the boat. What people really probably needed to happen was that everything stayed the status quo in the election. That means Obama reelected, the Republicans retained control of the House, and the Democrats retained control of the Senate. All that happened, and the reason he said that is, you know, if something shifts, then there's no incentive really to get anything done in the lame duck session because everybody's going to hold their cards and wait until the regular session starts in January. But now that nothing's moving, there's a possibility that stuff can get done.
Yep.
And, certainly it does seem like a long shot right now, but I think it's going to be a longer shot if nothing can get done here the next month or so. I really don't see any reason that anything's going to move on it for the next 8 years, probably.
No, you're absolutely right. So here's fingers crossed for the next 6 weeks. They return to session, what, next week, right?
Very soon. I don't know exactly when. Yeah.
All right, we'll see what happens. Hey, we get to wrap up an O'Malley's Move this week. Always exciting. Let's hear part one again.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1-$2 PLO8 game. We're one of the better players at the table and have one of the bigger stacks. We're in the small blind with $400, and it's early in the night. The under the gun calls. Under the gun plus one folds. The MPs one and two fold. Hijack calls. Cutoff calls. Button folds. And we look down at the ace of clubs, 10 of spades, 9 of hearts, 6 of spades. Yeah, not the greatest starting hand in the world for PLO 8. But with $9 already in the pot, we'll make the $1 call to see a flop. The big blind checks. Pot is $10. And the flop comes jack of clubs, 8 of spades, 7 of hearts. We flopped the nuts and our first act. We want to punish any low draws that might be out there and any random sets looking to boat up for cheap. We make it $8 to go. The big blind folds, but everybody else calls. The pot now stands at roughly $40, and the turn is the 4 of spades. That's not the greatest card in the world, but we still have the nut high and a low, though it's very, very weak. We lead out for $30. This time, the under-the-gun calls, leaving him about $500 behind, but the other players muck. The pot is nearing $100 as the river brings the 3 of spades. Ouch. We now have a 10-high flush and the fourth nut low. So we check, planning to check call a reasonable amount. Our opponent bets $64 into the $100 pot. So what do you think? Is this reasonable?
I love this one. This is probably my favorite O'Malley's Move yet.
Really?
Yes, it is. Because I think there's so much to consider here. And initially, I was going to make this call, and I thought it was going to be a pretty easy call. And then I thought about it a little bit more, like we always should, but we rarely ever do.
Right.
And I think I might be changing my mind here. But regardless, I think it's a borderline decision. I could easily defend either way here. I guess my thought process is I'm highly doubtful that we're going to scoop here. even though we do have a two-way hand. So that means we're risking, if I did the math correctly, $64 to win $82. That's just slightly better than 1-to-1 on our money, which only makes sense if we're nearly guaranteed to win half. And I certainly don't think we're guaranteed to win either half here. It seems likely we might get one, but there's certainly no guarantee here. I think our opponent was on a low draw from the beginning, and that means our ace-six is likely crushed here. He definitely could be making this bet with ace-deuce, knowing we wouldn't check with ace-deuce, so he's guaranteed at least half the pot, so he's almost like free-rolling on us in a sense. But he could also, you never know what you have with those other couple cards, so we could have spades in the back door to scoop. So I think the deciding factor for me after all this is that if he only had ace-deuce, why would you bet so little here? You know, if I had ace-deuce, I had no high, I'm going to bet more here because there's really no risk to me unless I'm getting quartered. So I might as well bet more and try to take the whole hand out. Why give up half the pot to someone?
Yeah.
You know, at this point, we've invested $40 in this pot. I think I'm going to wait for a better spot before I risk 64 or more.
Well, I wrote gross. That's what I wrote last week. One of the first lessons I learned came the hard way when I made the second best hand both ways once, and that's one of the like platinum rules: is never be second best both ways, especially right. In a multi-way pot. But in this instance, you should at least always try to have the nuts for at least half. If you get quartered, it's bad; it's dumb luck or bad luck or whatever. But generally, if you have the nuts going one way and your head's up, you're probably going to get half back. In O'Malley's case, he doesn't have the nuts either way, and likely is just playing for half the pot with a call here. And I have to agree with my partner here. Risking 64 to win 82 is not good poker when you don't have the nuts at least once. So I'm folding. I mean, I could be wrong, and we probably could call and win half this pot, but if we didn't, I would just be sick to my stomach losing $100 on this pot with the second best hand both ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's see part two.
Hello again. We're mainly worried about the nut flush with the nut low. If he had exactly that, though, wouldn't he have raised the turn to protect against boats? Something doesn't add up here. This most likely isn't a scoop, but I think we're good at least one way. We call. Our opponent shows us the ace of spades, deuce of hearts, deuce of clubs, four of clubs. Phew. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes a chopped pot feels like a win. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, we won half. But again, I think we risked quite a bit to do that. I think our opponent made a bad bet here. I think if I was him, I definitely would have bet more and not take the chance that that we would get called here. In fact, actually, I mean, he obviously didn't bet high enough to get O'Malley out, so he lost half the pot. This bet. And I guess the other thing on this too is obviously we won this one. We're never results oriented on this show, right? But again, this is kind of like, to me, kind of like a limit thing. And limit, you got to think of it in a long term. You know, that's why you usually make those river bets in limit, because you only have to be wrong or right once every 5, 6, 7 times, depending on the pot, to make it a profitable play, making it consistently. Here, I just don't think if we consistently make this kind of call that we're going to be a winning player long term.
I have to interrupt you a second. I want to ask you, did you say he didn't make a big enough bet on the end?
Our opponent, I don't think.
Okay, well, it's pot limit, right?
Oh, did he bet the pot?
Well, I mean, he bets, they all limped in the beginning, then he bets $30 in the turn. So I don't know how much money is in the pot. I guess, well, there's $8. I guess $8 after the flop.
There's at least 60 in the pot.
Yeah.
Because just on the turn bets, there was 60. And
right. So the turn, there's 60, and there's 8 and 30. So there's like 90 in the pot. He bet two-thirds of the pot. I mean, do you think you should bet more than two-thirds of the pot?
I easily would have bet
the
pot.
Yeah, you just would have bet pot? Okay.
Yeah.
I want to make sure it wasn't 64.
I'm really not putting O'Malley on the low one. I could be wrong, but I'm willing to take that risk. Again, being the aggressor rather than the caller, I'd rather take that risk that I'm going to get quartered on the low and miss the high, because I really don't think you know, why would O'Malley not bet the low here? So I really think from if I'm the opponent that I know I've got the low locked up. I know I don't have a high at all. I mean, what was his high?
Deuces.
Pair of deuces, right? So why do I want to give just hand over half the pot to this guy? I want the whole thing. And I'm not going to win the high on showdown, so I'm actually going to bet the pot there. And then really put him to a test.
Yeah, he has fours. I guess he has fours.
I mean, as it is, the 64 is probably a big enough bet. I mean, it certainly would have got me to fold. But, you know, at this point, I mean, why not put the extra 36 in there? I mean, unless he didn't have it. I mean, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Maybe he didn't have it. But
yeah, I mean, there's probably some information that we didn't have that might nullify all this. But assuming that you had enough money to make a pot-sized bet there, I'm going to make a pot-sized bet. And I know there's probably people out there saying, oh, you never bet just a low, Scott. And in a multi-way pot, absolutely not, unless I'm really convinced that my other opponents are both going high.
Right.
Heads up, I think it's completely different. You know,
right.
I think you need to bet that low when you know it, you have it. And again, this game, again, the bottom line in this game is scooping. And whatever you need to do to scoop. And I don't think you need to get transfixed on having to have a good hand both ways to scoop. You just have to have the only hand at the end.
Right. I think in the long run, you don't want to play for half the pot ever. Unless you invested so much at the end and you're positive that you have half the pot. But playing for half the pot with second best hands is a losing play in the end, and we probably should have folded.
Yeah, and I think that's a big problem with Omaha players is drawing to one half.
Yeah.
That's where I think people really lose money in Omaha. Like, you know, hey, there's two low cards out there. I got ace deuce. I got to stay in and hope I catch. Well, you catch at the end, you only get half the pot, and you might be quartered on that. On top of that. That's a bad move. I mean, on the river, it's a little different because now you know it's done and everything. But when your head's up, I mean, there are times I'm going to make that call because I want that half the pot. There's a lot of money invested in it. But I got to be more confident about my hand than I was here.
I mean,
there's nothing screaming confidence to me at all, or high or low in this hand.
Right. Yeah, it's tough because he flops the nuts and the other guy's drawn to the low. The low gets there and it goes runner to lose the nuts, and it's just, you know, flopping a nut straight in Omaha is so painful because
it is.
Ultimately you're not going to do anything with it.
Get a dodge bullets, baby. All right, a few weeks ago we shared with you a suggestion from listener Dan Banks that we devote a show to the best poker quotes of all time, real or fictional. And of course we asked all of our listeners to help us out. And to help us out, you did. I know we were laughing before the show. We said some really good stuff that our listeners came up with here. So we're just going to read through them. I mean, you know, let's not make this any more complicated than we have to. And let's just kind of laugh a little bit here. So, you know, I started the top one off. You know, I knew we were going to get, I just knew, we were going to get inundated with Rounders quotes.
Of course.
And I'm not dissing that because there are some amazing quotes in that movie. I mean, it really is a great movie. But at the same time, I kind of appreciate the folks that they were a little bit more creative in sending it in. But let's start it off with a Rounders quote. Al Spath, who actually writes a column for us every once in a while.
Yep.
Probably one of my favorite ones from Rounders. Mike McDermott to Johnny Chan when he asked what cards he had. Mike, you have it? He asked me. Sorry, John. I don't remember.
I don't remember.
And of course, again, it was a limit hand at the end, right? You know, when there's $8 in the pot and Johnny's going to fold for a single bet, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it was pre-flop, too. They didn't even flop. So, I mean, when we asked Johnny on the show, we're like, would you have folded some young punk who only made it one more bet to go? He's like, absolutely not. Okay, Nicholas Besser says, I have two pair, a pair of red tens and a pair of black tens.
Now, I don't remember exactly know where this came from, but I was thinking this was the MASH one, right?
Well, it's the MASH one, he has four tens. But I can't remember if he says red tens or black tens, or if he just says, that's it, two pairs of tens, two reds and two blacks. But I'm not, or if he just says two pairs of tens. But later on, I'm going to talk about a MASH quote that's directly related to that. And at the end of it, it's pretty hilarious. But yeah, I think it's basically the one from MASH.
You know, and what's kind of funny about going through this is we know that some of these, when they get in the poker vernacular, then you hear people repeating them at the table.
Yeah.
And sometimes you roll your eyes like, okay, great, you've seen Rounders. Congratulations. But other ones, like this one, I think this is a dangerous one. I know in some rooms, if you table your hand and say, I have two pair, and you put down four tens, there's going to be somebody that beats the stuffing out of you.
Yeah. You know, I've been giving people lessons on when you have aces up, you say aces up, you don't say two pair, you know. And we did it at the home game, too, and people look at me like I'm crazy, but it's true, man. I'm telling you, if you say you have two pair and you show aces up, people are going to get upset with you. It's going to happen. Don't believe me. Okay, so where are we? Oh, we're with Zorag, right? Our friend Zorag. He says, hey, guys, all red. And that's Topher Grace as himself in Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. You know, we were talking about this one, the movie clips. And I got to say, I just, nothing about this scene really captured me.
No.
And even this line, I guess. So maybe, I'm sure it's just me, but even when I watched the whole scene, people were talking about one of the greatest scenes ever. Mm-hmm. Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. But I think you just like to argue with Zorag.
All right, Leslie Paul's great Reno ambassador said, wow, big surprise, Rounders. Say, listen, here's the thing. If you can't spot the sucker in the first half hour at the table, then you are the sucker.
Yeah, and that's one of those things I think that they, when they made the movie, they took a conglomerate of all the best quotes that they got in their
somebody
research.
Else said something very similar and attributed to Doyle Brunson, which you know, would not be shocking to me at all, so...
Al Spath makes a second appearance on the list. Amarillo Slim, the greatest proposition gamble of all time, held to his father's maxim, you can shear a sheep many times, but skin him only once. That's probably more just gambling in life than it is poker, but same sentiment.
I hope I never have to actually skin a sheep. That's kind of messy, isn't it?
Yeah, not only that, but that would mean that we probably had to sell the magazine or go broke and to have that as your profession, so that would be kind of depressing.
Or that we're on Amazing Race. I'll finally convince you to go to the Amazing Race.
You're not doing the Amazing Race.
It's like a challenge or something, yeah. But no, yeah. I don't do well with blood. all right, so Free Live Poker, an organization out in Arizona, they posted on their Facebook page, quote, but they were suited.
Notice how that quote isn't affiliated to anyone, because everyone has said that.
Yep, exactly.
Brian Fons, our good friend and attorney, says, everyone out of the shower, I got a flush. Now, I remember Ross saying that on Friends, so I'm pretty sure that was the quote, and that's one of my favorite lines of all time. That's hilarious. I got a flush.
Got a flush.
We even played that clip back when we were at the Times still.
Did we?
Oh, yep, we played it in the studio there, so that's an oldie but a goodie.
Oh, here's an academic one from Richard Malatesta. If you always start with the worst hand, you'll never take a bad beat. That's like one of those bumper sticker ones. Where you gotta stop. You know, George Carlin would say, "Yeah, you gotta stop and think about that one."
Look both ways before playing a bad hand. Okay, Tom McDonald, another classic. You're good, kid, but as long as I'm around, you're second best. That's Lancey Howard from the Cincinnati Kid.
Greatest poker movie of all time.
Oh yeah, absolutely, Scott.
And probably one of the greatest lines from poker movie.
That is a great line, though. Absolutely.
I mean, the whole movie was that line. You take that line out and, you know, it's nothing. Well, it's something.
Well, it's pretty bad already, but you have to have that line to save the movie.
Just didn't hold up over time. That's the only problem. All right, Robbie Clapper, I can dodge bullets, baby.
Phil Hellmuth.
Famous one.
World Series. Dave Palm, our L.A. ambassador and longtime listener. Two outs and it comes hobgoblin, hobgoblin. So sick. That was Roland DeWolf to David Williams. I have no idea what it means, but it's hilarious.
I mean, I guess it's a fancy way to say runner, runner, right?
I guess.
Or missed it. I mean, obviously two outs and, I don't know.
Brick.
Anybody that uses funny words, I think it's very creative right there. All right, Jeff Pearson says, sometimes nothing could be a real cool hand. From Paul Newman and Cool Hand Luke.
Did you notice that? It was Paul Newman from Cool Hand Luke, Scott? Did you get that?
We still have this running bet that we got to resolve at some point.
Oh, yeah. With Jeff Pearson sending it in, isn't enough for you, right? You got.
Well, I mean, that's not the line I was talking about. I was talking about the Kickabuck line.
Kickabuck, so. You'll see. You'll see.
Yeah, you'll see.
Jeff Pearson again. You call, it's going to be all over, baby. Scotty Wynn at the 98 World Series of Poker, the final hand. And, of course, Kevin McBride from Florida. I call. I play the board. Not good. It was all over, baby.
Absolutely the most dramatic ending to the World Series, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Darren Michaels writes in, why did I call a pot-sized bet with just a gut shot? Because I felt lucky, and it was the right decision because I hit. He attributes this to everyone at my home game.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. All right, Rich Santoro, very vocal on the forums. He says, the late Amir Vahidi, you must be willing to die in order to live.
Well, I thought you were going to do an Amir Vahidi there. You've been doing well all along. Now you just...
Yeah, sorry.
Now you just give us Chris Cassenza on that one.
Sorry. I just thought it was odd that he's dead, and then we used a quote about him dying to
World Cup. Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
I was reflecting on that before I decided to pull out an impression of the guy. So.
Well, as we talked at the beginning of the, before the show, too, that obviously some of these quotes may be not attributed... obviously people said it, but right.
They may not be the ones who invented or coined
it. The entomology of it might have come from somewhere else.
That's a big word for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'm working on trying to get that in Words for Friends. Very hard to do, though.
Make sure you use those big words when you're shearing sheep.
All right, Rich gave us one more quote. I came into the world without my consent, and I will leave against my will, from Phil Locke.
Wow.
He says he just really enjoys anything that Phil Locke says.
Are we starting to get away from poker and actual just philosophy? I mean, what? I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, I mean, maybe I came into the tournament without my consent and I will leave against my will.
Yeah. I was bankroll for this event. I didn't want to play.
I didn't want to play.
But now that I'm at the final table, I'm taking it down. All right. Chicago Joe, our good friend Chicago Joe and ambassador for the Chicagoland area, says, a man with money is no match against a man on a mission. Doyle Brunson.
Yeah, I think this should be the quote for the big one for the one drop or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
You know, essentially, you could be the richest person in the world, but it doesn't mean that you could be the best poker player.
That's right. I mean, look at the guy with the owns the banks. What was his name?
Andy Beal.
Andy Beal, yeah, Andy Beal, that's right. So, you know, he had all the money, thought he could make him nervous, but in the end, he lost.
All right, MCO Mikey writes in. I love this one. I'm so glad he reminded me of it. Last night I stayed up late playing poker with tarot cards. I got a full house and four people died. From the legendary Stephen Wright and his dry humor.
Man, I miss Stephen Wright, like, being on TV all the time. He was hilarious.
He's actually coming to Tampa here relatively soon, I think. So
man.
I was thinking about going, but they charged like $40 or something.
Oh, jeez.
He was worth $40 20 years ago, but... Now I don't know. But now I'm reminded of some of the good stuff, so maybe.
I had a couple that I wanted to add to it. One that I thought everyone would remember, but they didn't. Look, I have all the clovers. That was Phyllis on The Office when they had the casino night, and she makes a flush that knocks out Kevin, who, by the way, was the one who said, in 1990, whatever, I won the Deuce of Seven triple draw low ball bracelet. Yeah, I can play poker, he says, or something. That was a great episode. But, to get back to the match thing, my favorite quote of all time, and it just happens to be poker, but my favorite quote of all time, and the scene, you have to set it up, it's because, it's cold in Korea. That's what they talked about, the war there was so brutal, because the colds were extremely cold, and the hots were extremely hot, the weather was just crazy. And so the episode opens with Hawkeye, and he's got long johns on, and everyone else is freezing, and he's nice and warm. Literally, like, taking off his shirt and everything because he's got long johns underneath it. And everyone's like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. So his friend, Trapper John, in the tent starts sneezing. And so out of guilt, he takes the long johns over and gives them to his friend Trapper because he wants him to get better. He doesn't want him to get sick. But then ultimately, they're in a poker game. And Trapper is sitting there playing. He's playing against Radar. And he says to Radar, you know, Radar makes a bet that he can't cover, and he's like, we accept these, and he opens up his shirt, and he's got the long johns, and he's got Radar touching them, you know, if you know how soft and smooth they are and everything. And then Hawkeye starts freaking out. He's like, you're betting my long johns. You better win, buddy. And then he says, ha, full house. And then Radar says, I guess that beats two pair, right? And then, you know, Trapper's like, it sure does. So for some reason, Hawkeye wants to know what the two pair were. And that's when Radar says, tens. And he goes, that's it? He goes, what, tens and what? And he's like, that's it, two pairs of tens. And then and then that's when Hawkeye says, you lost them. You lost my beautiful double weave, semi-woolen, sensually soft long johns to an astigmatic missing link with four tens. It's like the greatest quote ever written for that show. And it's poker. Anyway, that's my favorite quote of all time, right there, man. That, yeah. And I love the get out of the shower one. That one's pretty funny, but
kind of tough to use the Long John one in actual poker conversation.
I know. But I tell you, if anybody makes quad tens, like, you know, our friend John Lanier made quad tens to beat me on the last time we ever played together. But I don't think he was astigmatic, so I couldn't say it to him. But but I want to thank all of our Facebook friends and our listeners and our readers for sending those in, because that a lot of those things, oh my God, I had no idea existed, and now we're just that much more richer for the poker. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I can't wait to use some of these.
Oh, absolutely.
This is Noah Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, we're going to blow Chris's brain this week. We've got a 3-6 limit hold'em hand.
Hey, I played 3-6 limit at the Commerce, so I'm well prepared for whatever you send my way.
All right, it comes to us from, quote, Leonard K. I don't know why he put his name in quotes, but, maybe another part of our mass amount of witness protection program folks that listen to our show.
Do I need to write this one down, or is this one I could just do off the top of my head?
We'll see. I don't think it's very complicated.
Okay.
But, you know, it's 3-6 limit, right? How complicated it be? You just got to push somebody off the hand.
Okay.
All right, so the setup is it's a live nine-handed 3-6 limit hold'em game, a loose game where no one is respecting any raise preflop. Okay, you don't need to tell us the stuff that we already know.
That's right. So it's 3-6.
This is like every 3-6 limit game ever dealt.
That's in the description on the big board. 3-6 loose game, everybody calls, no one respects raises.
Yeah, if you go two hands without calling, they kick you out. Well, we need action players in this game. So he says, it ends up being 4-7 handed on the flop. This tends to make a very difficult table for me. When there are so many loose calling stations at the table, I am having an impossible time putting anyone on hand. I usually have a much easier time in limit when the table is tight, passive, and I am the aggressor, where there might be one or two calling stations at the table. In this case, everyone has been limping every hand, and if they limp and someone raises preflop, they are still calling.
Okay.
I want to know where this magical play, this tight, passive 3-6 limit game, he's found here. He's probably not going to tell me, because, I mean, that's like finding Bigfoot, I think. All right, so here we go. The under-the-gun player limps. A few other limpers come in. Notably, a stud player with 2,000 in a chip rack waiting for a bigger game. Always love that when people are waiting for that bigger game, and now I'll play 3-6. What do you got open? I'll play anything. And they sit down with that. He says, our hero is in the cutoff with ace-queen off. So a couple limpers, including Mr. Moneybags here. What are you going to do?
Where are we? In the middle?
We're in the cutoff.
Or in the cutoff. I'll raise. I don't care, because I still want to try to get, you know, the button if I can, you know, and be in position. I want to try to get the button out at least to be in position in this hand, so I don't mind raising here.
Yeah, again, I mean, this is the thing with limit, is even if you know everybody's going to call, it's still a premium hand, so you gotta get value from your premium hand, so you build a pot, and then obviously you're going to adjust on the flop if you completely miss here or something, but that doesn't change the fact that you shouldn't still raise with good hands, and as you're right, you know, you want to you got enough people in there that this hand's going to be difficult already. You know, if we can get a couple of the remaining people out of the way, then that's going to help us.
Very good.
All right, well, that's exactly what our hero does. The small blind calls, the big blind calls, under the gun calls, and the stud player calls.
So the button definitely got out of the way, so we're in position is what you're saying.
That is correct.
Excellent.
He says, now the small blind, the big blind player, I don't have much table time with, but I know the under the gun to be a pretty good player who's capable of limping with stinger hands and connectors. Ooh, I like that.
Stinger hands, huh?
Hmm.
I don't know what that means.
He says, the mid-position stud player has been bluffing way too much for a limit game and has been getting caught nearly every time, but doesn't seem to care because the money in this game is like peanuts to him. So I know his range to be in 82 cards.
Okay.
He's always the top guy to play with. That's kind of why I hate when those people sit down, because, you know, to them, it's like they're playing Keno or Scratch Off.
Yeah.
You know, just going to put their money all the way in and hope that the B11's called.
All right, pot's $30, five handed the flop, and our hero says his plan is to be very aggressive on the flop. If I hit, fold if I miss, and someone bets out, and C bet if it just checked me. Pretty solid.
Wow, he's got a pretty good game plan going in.
Yeah. He says, since the button fold, I'm in a good spot to see what develops. The flop is queen, nine, deuce, rainbow. And he says, that seems like a perfect flop for me, but the small blind bets out. The big blind folds, the undergun calls, the middle position calls, and it is now on us.
I just call. There's a draw there that can get there, jack 10, but raising here is not. It's only going to make jack 10 more lucrative to play the turn now. So I'm just going to call the turn, the flop here.
Yeah.
If I raise, no one's going to fold for $3 more with all that money in the pot now. It's already 30 before that. Now you've got 42 probably in the pot, and you're looking at if you make it 3 more, it's going to be 48, $3 to win 48. No one's going to fold anyway, and you're only giving them better odds to draw on the turn when the bet's bigger. Maybe they check the turn, and then you can make it a bigger bet, or maybe you get to the guy, you know, on your right may bet, and then you can make it 12 to get the other guys out, have marginal hands like ace 9 or something. I don't think raising here is going to accomplish anything.
Well, it is going to build the pot a little bit, and we did hit top pair, top kicker, so it's not like we missed here where we had like ace king or something. You know, small blind could have anything, could have queen jack, or it could be a lesser hand. I think I'm going to raise. I'm going to try to, you know, get some bets in when I have the best hand or what I think might be the best hand. At worst, I think we're on second best right now. I mean, I think we've got two other players that are dead money here. So if I can build some value from them, and if I am behind catch up, that's two extra bets from people that I'm giving up value on. And well, if the small blind raises, then I really know that probably has something better than me, and then I have a little bit more information.
My problem are the other players, because and if I raise, why were they calling
raises,
$3?
Then we're probably going to get these other two people out, maybe. Well, put, maybe, you know, Mr. Moneybags probably isn't, but at this point I'm not really too concerned about him. I actually probably want him in, because he's just, we know we're going to be able to value bet anything and get him paid off. So, to be honest, I don't see much downside to raising here.
I'll disagree. I think that the more money you're putting in, the more reason you're giving Jack, you know, even gut shots to stick around, because now they're getting 16-1 on their money or whatever it is. Yeah,
they're not there yet.
You know what I mean? No, I know, but 16-1.
It's just
money
like in Omaha. You know, I want those players with two low cards and an ace deuce. I want them putting as much money in that pot as they possibly can.
But even on future streets now, you're giving them the odds. On future streets, by making it $48 for a $6 bet on the turn now to call again and then suck out on you. You're trying, maybe you're talking about making a bet and saving a bet. I just feel like
we don't know
case,
if a queen or an ace is going to come on the next... our hand could get better, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't go back and get bets back. At this point, I'm willing to put as much money as I can in a limit game with a decent hand, and I've got top pair, top kicker here.
I would agree with that if I was two or three-handed, but we're five-handed and everyone's called. I feel like you're giving them more money to not fold for the rest of the hand and catch up.
All right, but if the small blind raises, then you're pricing them out right there.
Yeah, I know, but you're a very if, very big if there, and you're now playing someone else's hand too for them, and I can't do that. I can only do what
I mean,
do.
It's all a calculation. I mean, I think there's probably a 50-50 shot that I'm going to get raised, so, and that's good for me, and if not, then I've just built a pot, and, you know, we'll see what happens on the turn, but I want those bets in.
And even then, too, let's say you do raise, and you make it, what, 6, and then he makes it 9. It's only 6 more to call to still win 50-something. I mean, at that point, they're still getting 9-1 on their money or whatever, and I don't think they're going to go anywhere if they have a draw anyway. So I don't think you're going to lose anybody if he does raise again. And then it's going to get capped, and there's going to be so much money in there that on the turn of the river, nobody can fold. And not that I want them to fold, but yeah, I think I do want to thin the field a little bit with just a queen. You know, I don't know. Oh, we'll see how it goes, but I'm going to just call. I'm not going to raise here yet. I'm going to wait till the next street and try to get a lot of big bets in if I can, if it's in blank.
All right, well, our hero says, ugh! I think in limits, sometimes I'm too aggressive and it bites me in the ass.
So I feel it might in this hand, but I feel like my hand range is much higher in general than the players I play. And heck, I hit the flop of top. I raise. Well played, sir. We'll see how it works out.
It's hand of the week. We know how it's going to play out.
I'm rooting for you. Chris is rooting against you.
Well, no, that's not true. I just feel like the better move right now is to call. In a turn when the bet's double, it might be a better chance for you to get people out and to make your hand stand. But, okay, so he raises. What happens?
Everybody folds. We win.
Yeah, right.
quite the opposite. Everybody calls.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know, maybe somebody has a straight draw with Jack 10, but I don't put it past someone to call with something like 9 deuce. Pot's at $54. The turn is an offsuit 6, which makes a 2 flush on the board. So our board now is queen 9, deuce 6. Small blind checks. The under the gun actually says, I check to the raiser, which is basically telling me I have a better hand than at least her. And the middle position check. So checks around to us, and it's on us now.
Yeah,
I like the situation now.
Well, I mean, again, if we bet now, we probably aren't getting anybody to fold. So why not check and then just call on the river?
I want anybody to fold. I want people to call now. I got the best hand.
Yeah, but...
Raking in those bets, I feel a lot better now that the small blind doesn't have me beat. So I'm going to put a bet here. If everybody folds, great. I'll take this pot. No one's going to suck out on me. And if they call, they're probably calling with worse hands. And that's just $6, $12, $18 more dollars that I'm going to pick up in this pot. I don't think you can let this value go here. And no limit, obviously you want to check at this point to control the pot so it doesn't get out of control. But at limit, you need to get those bets in, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about our home game, and if this is what happened in our home game, I'm pretty sure if I was on the button or was the
our
button.
Our game's a little different because I think we're really good at limit, or at least good enough at limit. I mean, in this case, we've got the guy that's just bleeding money. We've got somebody else that's been described as somewhat competent, another person we don't know.
Yeah.
And generally a 3-6 in a casino environment, I don't see a lot of superstar players.
Yeah, I guess I would bet. I'm fearful of the guy with a ton of money doesn't care, you know, rivering a crappy 2-pair on us, and then we'll just say, what could have I done differently? Well, if we're going to play this hand the way you're supposed to play it, you probably are supposed to bet here, and you can't do anything differently. I don't really see any.
But against that kind of guy, you need to get your money in when
right.
you got it.
That's what I'm saying. So you have to bet here. You know what I mean?
But, you got
to
get that money in. And if he catches up, you know, that's the way it goes. But more often than not, he's not. And that's $12 we're going to get out of that guy.
Yeah. I mean, we seem to have the best hand here, and it's really the only draw now. I mean, somebody had 4 or 5 or something like that. That'd be ridiculous.
I mean, the Jack 10 is still alive.
But the Jack 10 is the one that's alive. So, I mean, obviously, you're not going to get Jack 10 now. So, if an 8 or a king comes, you're going to have to, you know, just call, hoping that the betting can't be opened up behind you when it gets bet out. But, I guess I'm betting. A little of the no limit in me said to check it. That's what I was thinking. But I guess I'm probably betting.
All right. Well, I'm betting. You're betting. And our hero bets too. And he says, everyone, you guessed it, calls.
Yeah.
Pot's $78. The river is a 6 that doesn't complete a flush. So our final board is queen 9, deuce 6, 6. And the first two players check. And now the middle position, Mr. Richie, bets into us.
Yeah. Well, I'm just calling. I mean, it's so much money out there for one bet. You're getting 10 to 1, more than 10 to 1 on your money with top pair, top kicker. I'm not going to raise. You know, and if the guys behind me raise after this, then I get out. But there's no way I'm folding for one bet.
Yeah, I mean, and generally, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily rule out a raise here, but knowing that this guy is just kind of a bingo player, it's very possible that he was just sticking around with a 6 and now he's got his beat. So you're right, definitely not going to fold. I'll call here and go to showdown and give him a little nice hand. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
When he takes the pot, but I'm certainly not folding for one last bet here. And I think raising is just going to cost us some money.
Okay, so we would have called.
All right, so our hero says, well, even though this is almost always smells bad to me in a limit game, I have too much invested in this hand that I call. It's hard for me to think anyone with pocket nines or deuces would not re-raise me either on the flop or turn, and I don't want this guy to get away with betting any 9 in his hand.
The other two players call as well, too. The small blind shows King-King.
Wow.
Under the gun, Mux face down. I show my ace-queen, and the middle position player shows Jack-6 offsuit.
This is the guy with all the money, right?
As he rakes in a pot, he is red from laughing in a kind of a sick way, and this is the point where I leave the table after calling him a word I can't say on the air. Idiot. Under my breath. Hey, did I mention I was beat by pocket kings?
Yeah. And I have to admit that I like the way the kings played the hand.
Yeah.
I really do.
Let's see. Look back. They, I don't know. I think you missed the bet pre-flop. I mean, this is where I think people get try to... This is where the no limit bleeds into limit. You try to get tricky and trap people with hands. Again, I just want to get... When I get good hands, I want to get as much money in the pot as possible. Of course, then again, I'm betting and raising and three-betting with a wide range of hands, so that's kind of my MO. But so I can get away with doing it with kings, too, because I do it with crap as well. But I think he missed some value with the kings there. Pre-flop. The flop... Bets out, yeah, absolutely. I would bet out with that. And then the turn. I don't know why you slow down the turn. Why would you slow down the turn with kings?
Well, here's two things. One, I disagree with the preflop, you saying he should bet there. I think that that's the right way to play that hand. He's going to be out of position the rest of the way, and he knows he's not going to get anybody to fold. And the more money he puts in the pot in the limit game, the more reason why small cards and connectors will stick around and actually have the right pot odds to go further in the hand. Whereas now, if you check it, he's got deception of the kings. He hopes that they all come unders. And then when he bets out, he's hoping to get the guys who are playing connectors, who are like 7-8, to get out of the hand now. When it doesn't happen, he's thinking that, okay, somebody's got the queen. When you raised him, he's probably thinking, okay, he raised preflop, so he might have aces, so I'm not going to re-raise here. And that's why he slowed down the turn, because he figured when you raised him on the flop when he bet out, he may think you might have aces here. Why should I now 3-bet it and then go further with this when I could just check call, and beat ace-queen, which is essentially what he did, just happened to go runner-runner-6 for the idiot to win. So yeah. I really like the way the kings played the hand. I think that raising there only is not going to get anyone out, and it's going to build a pot for them, and you're going to, just like when you say you have pocket aces and no limit hold'em, you win a small pot or you lose a big one. Same thing in limit with kings. You know, you can't control. You got to save a bet and make a bet when you can, and I think that he played him right. And the reason why I remember this specifically was because a long time ago, even before we had the studio, Fassel came on the show and gave us a quiz. I don't know if you remember that. And then one of the questions was, Chris, if you had pocket kings in limit hold'em and you were out of position pre-flop and you had a bunch of lippers, do you raise here or do you call? And I said, I call, and he said, that's right. And he was shocked that I got it right. And he said, the reason why was the reasons I just gave you. And I don't think anyone could ever find that show now. It was 300 shows ago. But that's what it was. In limit, out of position with kings like that, with a multi-way pot like that, you want to wait till the turn to see if there's any strength. And if there's not, that's when the bet doubles. And you're not going to let all those connectors get the right odds to draw out on you the rest of the hand. So that was why I thought he played him well. I thought the kings played it well.
Yeah, again, it's your table image.
Yeah,
how you're playing, so that makes sense if you've got that image where you can do it. You know, my style, it wouldn't work. I need to raise there so it conceals the times when I'm raising with Jack-9.
Yeah. Jack-6. You just knew that he made a lot of comments about the stud guy. You just knew he was going to win the hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but sick, absolutely sick.
All right, Leonard, sorry you all lost the hand, but we're going to send you something that hopefully will wipe those tears away. A classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right in them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Be sure to ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
All right, I want to thank our Facebook friends and our listeners for sending in all those cool quotes. I'll be sure to use them next time I'm in a home game. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa.
contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.